No sooner had those gracious words about good news to the poor and lame and blind and all that happened than everyone in the synagogue is filled with anger, and they rose up and they ran him out of town so they could throw him off a cliff. And there you have it, today's news in a 2,000-year-old book. If the headlines I see, the mail solicitations that I get, and the talking heads I hear have anything in common, it's that everyone is filled with anger and they are itching to throw someone off of a cliff. The outrage is apparently endemic. Really, the only thing that separates us is who it is we want to throw off the cliff. Each one of us is absolutely certain we are right. The most dangerous among us are the religious ones who are not only sure that we are right, but we are justified by God. God, however we define that term, is on our side. So there's a joke about the time that the Pope and all the cardinals were at the Vatican, and an aide came up during the meeting to tell the Pope that he had a phone call. The Pope allowed us how he was kind of busy with some important stuff here, and that the aide should take a message. But the aide says, well, it was a pretty important phone call, you see, because it was Jesus. Jesus Christ, said the astonished Pope. Yes, our Lord is on the phone, and there's good news and there's bad news. Well, by this time, everyone is on their feet in wonder, and the Pope almost shouts, and what's the good news? Well, the good news is that Jesus has indeed returned to earth, said the aide. And the bad news is he's calling from Salt Lake City. Now, that's funny, but it's not really too scary because Mormons may be a bit weird, but they're Christians, mostly. And but what if the call were from Jerusalem? Not so bad. Mecca? Mumbai? Clearwater? There's a place in each of our hearts where we would actually be offended if God were to favor them over us. And that's what is behind that violent fury in the synagogue that day. Jesus had just declared that God's promise of good news to the poor, release to the prisoners, sight to the blind, liberation of the oppressed, and the year of the Lord's favor. And then made it very clear that these weren't just promises for the chosen people of Israel. They were for everyone, absolutely everyone. Even their ancient sworn enemies in Lebanon. And as we'll soon see, when Jesus heals the centurion's servants, those detestable Romans. Everyone's included. This was intolerable. It's disgusting, and it must be stopped. And in their fury, the men of the synagogue rose up to stop God's promise of grace. If they couldn't have it all for themselves, then no one on earth would get it. It wasn't just me first. It was me only, or nobody. This toxic anger is today's news in a 2,000-year-old story. I know toxic anger when I see it, because it came close to killing my spirit. A long time ago, well over 30 years ago, I had it all, but I was unhappy. My husband was and is a good man. We had a beautiful daughter. I had a successful career, but I was unhappy. Not just unhappy, I was generally angry. A simmering toxic stew that came out as, well, we'll call it witchiness. I know I could not have been very pleasant to be around, let alone live with, because I didn't like being around me all that much. I wasn't going to church yet, so I asked the person I trust the most, my primary care physician, Dr. Willis, for help. Maybe she had a pill she could give me. And Dr. Willis said, nope, what you need is a therapist. You need a counselor. You don't need a pill. She gave me a name or two, which I stuffed in my purse and ignored for a while, but I finally made an appointment, and I went. And the counselor and I talked about my life, my hopes, yada, yada, yada. I didn't think we were getting much of anywhere. until one session when we talked about my simmering pot of toxic anger. And in that session, she said something that changed my life. She observed that anger isn't usually the first emotion, it's the second one. We feel it after we felt something else. So what are your first emotions, she said. What led to your anger? Anger can come out in a lot of different ways. It can come out as general witchiness. It can come out in a sudden outburst of rage, like those men in the synagogue. Or everyone's favorite, passive aggressiveness. Queen. She said, you need to decide whether anger, whatever kind it is your best response to what you're feeling. Whether life is better for you when you're all wrapped up in all that anger. Or if there's another way you might cope. Yowza, wait, what? Anger's a choice? That didn't make any sense. I thought emotions just happen like car wrecks or hurricanes. So she and I explored some of the things that made me angry. And you know what? She was right. What comes before anger? Well, there's a lot of choices. Fear, grief, disappointment, frustration, hurt, rejection, confusion, abuse, degradation, disrespect. The list of first feelings is pretty long, actually. You might think of others. Whatever that first feeling is, it is at least very unpleasant, often devastating, and we want that feeling to stop now. So sometimes we handle it by getting angry. Anger is one of the ways to try and make that bad feeling stop. Now, I have to say that anger is sometimes an appropriate response. Jesus was angry at the money changers in the temple who were preying on the poor and who were abusing Jewish traditions to make money. Some anger is indeed righteous anger. Once again, I will quote what Frederick Dale Brunner says about God's wrath, God's anger. The wrath of God is the love of God in friction with the injustice and hatefulness of people. The wrath of God is the grace of God in collision with the selfishness and hatefulness of humanity. God's prophets, Moses, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Amos, Micah, and so many others were given the dangerous vocation of telling us not only that God loves us, which we want to hear, of course, but that God's wrath is very real. And most of those prophets, along with Jesus, sooner or later, are thrown off the proverbial cliff for telling God's truth to us. Each of those prophets warned us that we need to turn from sin. And remember, our presiding bishop, Michael Curry, said that another word for sin is selfishness. We need to turn from sin and selfishness, and we need to follow God's will and law. And God's will and law is summed up very simply. The first command is this: thou shalt love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your strength. And the second is like unto it: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Pretty simple. And our neighbor includes people we can't stand. And loving ourselves, well then. So you see, generally, our anger isn't righteous. It begins as another feeling that we don't want or know how to deal with. Like getting back to those men in the synagogue in Nazareth, do you see that in their venomous hatred of another, their venomous hatred of foreigners and Romans, which undergirded their plan to stop Jesus' healing by throwing him off a cliff, they not only broke the command to love their neighbor, they also broke the command to love themselves. A world without love for God and neighbor and self will result in a scorched earth where everyone is in misery. Well, now the great thing about this same 2,000-year-old book that shows us the news, doesn't change very much, also shows us how to ask God to heal us and then how we can join God in healing the world instead of scorching it. In the letter of James, we're given this path forward. He says, "Know this, my dear brothers and sisters, everyone should be quick to listen." Listening deeply and without prejudging the other may be the most compassionate act of love that one human can do for another. The real test, the test of real deep listening, is this one: whether we can tell the other person what we heard them say so that they can respond with, "Yes, that's exactly what I meant." It's hard. But when we do it, when we really understand what another person is saying, we still may not agree with them, but we will at least be treating each other the way we wish to be treated, right? It's how we love our neighbor. The letter continues, "Be slow to speak." Be slow to speak. Being slow to speak tremendously reduces the possibility that we will say something that we'll regret but can't take back. Once we say something, other things are set in motion and we can't stop them. So first we need to consider what we want to happen before we talk. What we want to happen, what will we say that helps us be the kind of person that we want to be? And for those of us here, the kind of person that God has created us to be. A short test on whether you should say something. You ready for it? You can memorize this one in no time flat. Ready? Say nothing that you wouldn't say if Jesus were there. Or say only what you would say if Jesus is there, because he is. And finally, the letter says, be slow to be angry. Be slow to be angry. Whether that anger, like me, was forming into a toxic stew over the years, or whether it's sudden outburst, rage. Slow it down. Slow it down and deal with those first feelings. Deal with the first feelings first. They are real. They're important. They point to whatever it is you really need to deal with. So back to my counseling. What did I need to deal with? What were my first feelings? What was behind that witchy anger? And it took a while to sort out, but it came down to two things. Resentment. Resentment, my long work hours as a litigating attorney meant not enough time for my baby, my family, or me. And the other feeling was unworthiness. I wasn't truly lovable, desirable, valuable. And in the years since I've discovered this about myself, I've listened to so many others who felt the same way that I've stopped being astonished how many other people walk through life feeling unworthy of being loved. People who feel unworthy are in a way like those men in the synagogue in not loving themselves. We can't truly love anyone else. Well, I've worked hard on those issues over the years. Other first feelings popped up too, and the hard work has been worth it. I'm now much more comfortable in my own skin. I don't as readily forget who I am when I walk away from the mirror. But there are still days. There are still days when I struggle to put love into practice. Life is difficult, and you know what? People can be really annoying, and they don't do what I want them to do. And I get all wrapped up in myself, and I get pretty cranky. Right, Cindy? You wouldn't like me much those days, and I don't like myself much those days either. How thankful I am that God is patient. So are most of the people I work with. And so very forgiving. And putting love into practice starts with God, not with me. Sooner or later, usually sooner, God's love does something to bring me back to myself. Usually that love comes by way of someone who does something wonderful. Maybe by listening to me or reminding me I'm beloved. A random card from nowhere. Or sometimes it's just by someone being kind to me. Never underestimate the power of a simple smile or a sincere compliment. If you do that every day to somebody, you will change someone's life. I guarantee it. This love, when it's given to me, switches off the heat under my simmering pot of anger, and I come back to myself. This love is the power of God, the power of the Spirit, which upholds and awakens, which inspires and guides and sends everyone. Everyone is prophets, even children. And yes, God's prophets sometimes do get thrown off of a cliff. But mostly prophets do what God's prophets have done for thousands upon thousands of years. They change the world by hearing the word of love. Hearing the word of love and then doing it. As I've said many times before, yes, this is very hard work. The world will not support us much in this work. But a life of freedom, abundance, healing, faith, hope, and love is the only kind of life that's worth living. And I've said before, the retirement benefits are out of this world.